Welcome to the Doug Haldeman Show, Mortgage and Real Estate Talk, a show committed to educating, empowering, and entertaining you while saving you thousands. Here's your host, mortgage expert and consumer advocate, Doug Haldeman.
Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune. It's time to gain knowledge and become the guardian of your financial future. I want to thank our sponsor, Cornerstone Mortgage, known for having the lowest rates and the smoothest closings. If you have a question you'd like addressed on the air, you can text or call the show at 314-472-DOUG. Again, that's 314-472-DOUG, D-O-U-G, which is 3684. All the information from our show is on our website at smartwithyourmoney.com. So I am joined today by my good friend and longtime contributing expert, John Niemann. Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
You've been on many, many times, and I love having you on. It's always great having an expert, and in case somebody hasn't heard you before, you are, I will call, an expert at, you know, you're a CPA, you're a tax expert, and a tax resolution specialist.
Well, it's always fun to come on, Doug, and it's always good to see you, too. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm a listener of the show, and I've talked to some of your listeners, and I get the impression that your listeners would like to know more about you, personally.
Okay.
So if you'll indulge me for a bit, I know it's your show, and you always ask the questions, but would it be okay with you if I interview you?
I think it'd be great. You know, it's interesting because I get to interview other people every week, and you know, I haven't been interviewed on my own show.
So you know, I just want to try to get to learn more about your background, or have you share with your listeners more about your background. And you know, we'll start with, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in a few different places, but down in Southwest Missouri and over in Kansas. So Girard, Kansas, is where I lived until I was about 6 years old. And we had a publishing plant that was our family publishing plant that had been in the family since the late 1900s. Like, I guess it was about 1918, I think, when my grandfather bought this publishing plant and turned it into a really big publishing plant. They were one of the biggest in the country. He sold what were called Little Blue Books, and it was called the Haldeman Julius Publishing Company.
Little Blue Books.
So his goal was to educate the common man, and he basically would condense these novels down into small books and would sell them for a nickel each and a dime for big blue books.
Like book summaries or cliff notes?
Yeah, well, it was kind of book summaries, but the authors would actually write them, and we employed a lot of the biggest authors in the country through 1920s, 30s, and 40s. We had Upton Sinclair was on our payroll. Clarence Darrow wrote for us. Clarence Darrow was our family attorney. So they did some amazing things. And my grandfather actually gave Simon & Schuster their start in publishing. So I grew up inside of that book plant up until the time I was 7 years old. And then in 1977, it ended up burning to the ground. There were some fireworks that got sent inside of it. And the whole thing burned for 2 weeks, because when you have all these books inside of there, fire departments from many counties were there trying to put this thing out, and it took them a long time.
And that was a long time ago, so they didn't have the technology to fight fires that back then. But I thought you grew up on a farm.
Well, so I moved from there, and because that was in a really small town, and parents got divorced when I was 2 years old, so they were apart and constantly in custody fights back and forth with my brother and I moving between the houses, and my mom would have to move around, and as she would get remarried, eventually we ended up moving out on a farm, and there was actually a period of time when we got shifted back and forth between the houses so often that the courts had enough of it and just threw us in foster homes. So we spent about 9 months living in foster homes that my brother and I. There were nine kids total, but I had one brother that was a full brother, and the two of us were thrown in foster homes, and we lived in several different foster homes before eventually we were able to go back with our family. So it was nice once we got to go back. And living on the farm, I mean, when my mom married a guy that was a construction worker that had a remote farm, and that farm living definitely helped shape me on work ethic.
Right, and you know, the thing is that you mentioned that you moved around from school to school quite a bit, and you know, we have a common background there, because as a kid, I think by the time I graduated from high school, I'd been to probably eight different schools, and that's no fun.
I went to four schools just in second grade in 1 year.
T- tough to make friends.
Oh, definitely tough to make friends. But you learn to make impressions quickly
right.
by doing that. And I think, you know, all of those things shape you as, you know, make you who you are when you become an adult. So it was interesting. I mean, just that farm life. And Joplin is where I really consider to be my hometown, because after our publishing plant burned, my dad moved from Girard, Kansas to Joplin. And I moved there for high school and lived there from the time I was 14 until I was about 20 years old. I was going to go off to college. I was studying engineering. I actually ended up with a mechanical engineering degree eventually, but I couldn't leave for college because my dad was sick. And I stayed home to take care of him until he died when I was 19. And once he passed away, then I wasn't tied to my hometown. And went ahead and moved to St. Louis at that point, went to school at UMSL, and then eventually transferred to Mizzou to finish a mechanical engineering degree.
Yeah, and I also happen to know that you've got a very interesting ancestry as well in Missouri, going back. Well,
Missouri and Illinois. Century. Yeah, Missouri and Illinois, actually, because when I go back to my great-great-grandfather, John Adams, he actually was one of the founders of the Republican Party in the state of Illinois and was a good friend of Abe Lincoln. There were a lot of letters from Abe Lincoln to my great-great-grandfather. And, you know, he actually, you know, his home is on the National Historic Registry over in Illinois, up in Cedarville, Illinois. And he actually had – his daughters were amazing. So this was my great-grandmother and her sisters – did some great things. So my great grandmother, Sarah Alice Haldeman, was actually the first female bank president in the state of Kansas and the third one in the country. It was in 1904, and she was actually a bank president. And her sister, so my great great aunt, Jane Addams, was the first woman to win a Nobel Peace Prize in 1932.
That's impressive.
It was impressive. So having a Nobel Peace Prize in the family. So Jane Addams actually just visited the Hull House in Chicago. So she actually helped the women's suffrage movement to help women get the right to vote and just a lot of the equal rights that needed to happen. And it's interesting because I think that it's a long way from women's lib that we see today, because when you look back at a point when women really didn't have equal rights back then, she did some good work.
Yeah. Doug, I think it would be helpful, at least, well, to me and to your listeners as well, to find out what it is that makes you tick. What's your why? Why do you do what you do? And what's your mission?
Yeah, that's a really good question, John. And in case you just joined us, you're listening to Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1. I'm sitting with John Neiman, CPA and tax expert, who's interviewing me. So John, the question, what is it that makes me tick? It's a really good question. I have to pause on that for a minute because I'm actually pretty clear on that, but I want to make sure that I can articulate this clearly. And when I look at what makes me tick, for one, I'm driven for my family because I'm a family guy. Tammy and I have eight kids together, and there's a lot.
Yes, you do.
There's a lot in raising a family. But what makes me tick in the business world is different, because for me, it's about contribution. It's about I want to change people's financial lives with my advice. Okay, and I'm a mortgage professional. I spend my week doing mortgages for people, and I could just give people mortgages. Okay, they can get a mortgage anywhere. Although I'd say that Cornerstone Mortgage can deliver that mortgage cheaper and more effectively and efficiently than almost anywhere else. But why do I do it? I want to take my advice beyond giving someone a mortgage, because to me, a mortgage is just the largest debt that you're going to take on, and it needs to literally weave in to your long and short term financial and investment plan. And you need to be able to maximize your tax strategies, and you basically need to use it to help create wealth over time. And you need to have a proper debt strategy where the mortgage can be a great tool for that. Okay. I want people to have not just a great interest rate on the mortgage. I want them to have the lowest blended interest rate on all of their debt. And it just happens that the mortgage is a great tool to do that.
Yeah. You mentioned debt strategy, and that's interesting because, you know, as a CPA, my clients are coming to me more and more asking how to be debt-free. Let's talk about that for a while, because as I was coming up, that was kind of unusual. Nobody even talked about being debt-free. It wasn't even a consideration.
Right. It wasn't really a thought process to be debt-free.
Right.
And what does debt-free mean? Okay, because does it mean that you don't owe anybody anything? Yes, it could mean that. But I think there are a lot of situations where somebody may not necessarily want to be debt free in the sense of having no mortgage. Okay, if you have debt, it's because you choose to have the debt. Okay, and what I mean by that is that, let's say if somebody has a 4% interest rate on a mortgage, and if they're in the 25% tax bracket, then that means that their effective interest rate on the mortgage is somewhere around 3%. So I would ask that question of, if you have money invested in the market, okay, with your financial advisor, what's the expected interest rate return on that investment that you're putting out there? Okay, because when people talk about prepaying their mortgage and trying to pay it off quickly, I'll never criticize somebody for wanting to pay off debt and avoid paying interest. But what are you giving up if you pay off that debt would be one of my questions. So let's just say you can earn 6% return on the market and you're avoiding 3% in interest. Well, it's arbitrage. If you borrow money at one rate and you invest it at a higher rate, okay, that's arbitrage, and that can be a positive return for you. It's exactly what banks do every single day.
Right.
But banks will never give a consumer the advice to do what they do. It's just do what they say. And I think that people can employ a lot of those same strategies personally.
Well, in addition to that, you've got these folks out there that are paying massive interest rates on credit cards. And they may only owe $10,000 on all of their credit cards, and it's just tough to get out of that hole.
It is, and when I see somebody want to go to from a 30-year fix down to a 15-year fix, as an example, and their payment's going to go up dramatically, and then if I talk to them a couple years later, and all of a sudden they've accumulated a bunch of credit card debt because they have negative cash flow, and that 15-year fix now obligated them to a much higher payment, and they have a much higher payment, and then they accumulate credit card debt, well, that lower interest rate on a 15-year fix didn't serve them in that scenario. So I'm not saying people should never go with a 15-year fix, but they need to be conservative when they do it and make sure that they have a lot of money in reserve so that if something ever happens where they lose their job or something where they can't afford to make that 15-year fix payment, that they're not going to immediately go into credit card debt by doing it.
Right. Now, I know that because you and I had the same discussion when we were discussing my financial situation, because you just closed a loan for me last week.
Yeah, I mean, and as you and I sat down, and it was great dealing with you, John, on doing a mortgage, because we can have a very high-level discussion about finances and make sure that you have a great strategy in place, and you did, but you're right, because we reviewed that scenario that was a 15-year fix the best for you, and for cash flow reasons, you chose not to.
Right. I mean, just to share with your listeners, I was in an adjustable rate mortgage and had been since 2005. And up until this year, it worked out really well for me because I've been paying less than 4%. Finally, they're going to adjust my rate over what I think is fair. And Doug, you were able to get me a really low rate with good terms. And I was surprised and pleased that how the loan process went with Cornerstone.
Well, I appreciate that compliment. And anytime somebody chooses us to do their mortgage, I'm always honored because there are a lot of great mortgage companies out there, and there's a lot of really bad ones too. Okay, and to choose us out of all of them, I'm very honored. And especially when a business partner of mine like you, John, chooses us, I'm definitely honored, and I definitely appreciate the business and those compliments too.
Yeah, it was beyond my expectations, I think. First of all, you know, I have my own business, and usually when you have your own business, those who are listening understand that when you go to finance anything, it feels like they're trying to dig into everything. You have to supply all this documentation and financial history, but it went very smoothly.
Well, it's like a proctology exam. You know, I don't enjoy giving them any more than anybody likes receiving them when we ask for all those documents, but we don't have any choice. However, I mean, we try not to ask for anything more than what's necessary. And dealing with people that are self-employed is an area that I think a lot of loan officers really don't understand it that well. And that's an area that I'll say that you've helped educate me over the years, because I've had you as a resource that I can call and ask about the tax returns and how is this line item handled. And it's definitely become an area of expertise for me in dealing with self-employed borrowers. So if you're self-employed out there and you're looking for a mortgage, definitely feel free to give me a call. Or if you're just looking for a mortgage, period, feel free to reach out to me at 314 472-DOUG. That's 314-472-DOUG, D-O-U-G, which is 3684. You also can text me on that line. And a lot of people will send me, they'll send me notes through our website at smartwithyourmoney.com. They can go to the contact form and send me their information through there. John, if you have time to stick around, I definitely want to continue this high-level discussion about debt strategies, and I know you had some more questions about my background too, so we're going to talk about that more when we return. You're listening to Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1.
You're listening to The Doug Haldeman Show, Mortgage and Real Estate Talk. Here's your host, mortgage expert and consumer advocate, Doug Haldeman.
Welcome back. I am rejoined by my co-host today, John Neiman, CPA and tax resolution expert. Welcome back, John.
Hello, Doug.
So you and I have had a very, very long relationship. I think, what's it been, I guess, about 17 years ago when we met?
17 years.
Yeah, quite a.
That's a long time
in the business world. That is quite a while. It's nice to have a relationship that long,
right? It's rare.
Yeah, you get to know me back early in my days of owning my own company.
Right, you had your own business back then, and now you're partnered with Cornerstone.
It's been a great partnership, actually.
Doug, I want to continue interviewing you, if that's okay.
Sure.
I work a lot with young folks and. A lot of them want to be successful, but they just don't have a lot of money to get started. What kind of advice would you give that kind of person?
Okay, so if you don't have a lot of money to get started, I mean, people will say you have to have money to make money, and it certainly helps, but it's not a requirement. And it becomes a question of resources versus resourcefulness. And I'm going to give you an example of something that happened to me in college. So I was working at a little restaurant in Westport called Aunt Heidi's. I was basically working as a waiter there. And 1991, I had just moved up here. It was my first summer in St. Louis. And I had my first girlfriend since I moved to St. Louis that I was crazy about. Well, she dumps me. My car breaks down. Drove this little Volkswagen Jetta. My car breaks down. It was going to cost $1,200 to get it fixed. And the restaurant went out of business. So now I don't have a job, don't have a car. And I'm totally down and depressed because my girlfriend's just dumped me. So
I'm glad you didn't have a dog.
When I'm stuck, I was living in my sister's apartment in Maryland Heights, and I had $5 to my name. And I'm like, all right, I've got to find a way to get out of this funk. So I walked up to the Walgreens on Dorset Road, and I bought stencil and a can of spray paint. And I started going door to door in neighborhoods, asking people if I could paint their house number on their curb for $5. And my rule was I could not go home until I found at least 20 of them. So I had to make $100 before I could go home every night. Well, I ended up doing this 15 days in a row, made $1,500, and I was able to fix my car, get back on the road, go get another, you know, go get a real job, and didn't have to continue to do that because it was a lot of walking, and you know, it gets tougher and tougher each day because you have to walk further away from your house.
Right. Sounds like you were determined.
When you don't have transportation. But I was determined. I needed to get a car back. And you take a lot of rejection and a lot of knocking on doors where people don't answer, and you're trying to do it, you know, during the day when people aren't home. So I'll use that as an example of I didn't have much, you know, many resources at the time. I had $5 to my name, but I had resourcefulness. And this is just one of a million different examples out there that there's opportunity all around us if we can just find it and be open to it.
Yeah, well, that's the purest form of bootstrapping.
Right, it is. I mean, just that is pure hustling. I mean, it's definitely pure hustling. I mean, I used to do that all through college. I mean, because for me to put myself through college, it was, you know, I spent a lot of days sleeping in my car. I mean, I would drive back when I was going to school at Mizzou. I couldn't make any money there. I would hustle there. I ended up getting my first business license to sell hand warmers. Yeah, if I got a business license, I could order these things wholesale. It was those little square packets where it had a little disc in them, and you could click the disc, and it would heat these things up. So I got a license to buy them, and I started going to the football games at Mizzou and hustling them there just to, you know, to try to make money. So, I mean, I even tried to get a, a, a fishing job in Alaska, and I ended up going to Seattle where you get those fishing jobs, and it basically ended up being homeless for a good portion of the summer. And it was a pretty cool experience. Eventually, I wrote a book on how to find fishing jobs in Alaska and marketed this book in the 20 largest school newspapers in the country and started a mail order business while I was in college selling this book. So it was kind of an interesting way. I made, I wouldn't call it a massive fortune, that's for sure, but it was enough that it helped pay my tuition while I was in engineering school.
Now, with that kind of a background, I wonder, Doug, how did you find yourself in the mortgage business? How did you get started in the mortgage business?
All right, so kind of a long roundabout story. So what happened was when I was homeless in Seattle, I had to hitchhike from Seattle to Portland. I had a sister in Portland who eventually ended up flying me back to St. Louis because I was totally broke there. And I get back to St. Louis, and a buddy of mine let me crash on his couch for the summer, and he was about 5 years older than me, and he was already in the mortgage business. This is 1992. And to crash on his couch for the summer, he made me work off the rent by telemarketing for him. So I'd telemarket for him at night for mortgages in 1992, but I'm in engineering school, and I thought I was going to be an engineer. So I didn't – at the time, I didn't think I was going to be in the mortgage business necessarily. I thought that it was a backup plan for me only. But then as I got further and further through engineering school, what I realized is that I was a good engineer, but I don't know if I was ever going to be the best engineer. And I was good at design work, but I don't know that I wanted to do design work all day as an engineer. So I really wanted to deal more with people, and I was always – intrigued as an entrepreneur. I was definitely intrigued with real estate. My dad became a realtor, and so I was always around some real estate too. So that started to intrigue me. And as I got further through college, we actually started something we called the Corp. Okay, so I got a group of our friends together in college. We didn't have any money. None of us had family money. So we started our first corporation, and we started paying dues into this corporation of $150 a month per person. Okay, with four of us, we're accumulating $600 a month, and it accumulated pretty quickly, month after month. And then we would take that seed money and we'd go out and hustle. We'd get T-shirts printed and we'd go sell T-shirts at Oktoberfest. We threw a New Year's Eve party at the Grandel Square Theater and made $5,000 doing that. And it was just one thing after another. And we eventually, because we were in a party stage at that age, we were going to all the bars down on Washington Street, and we knew the bar owners, so we started cleaning the bars. We started a janitorial company, cleaning those bars after they closed to make extra money.
That sounds like too much fun.
Well, so eventually, as we accumulated more money and I had to buy a couple of partners out, we're down to just two of us. Well, in 1995, I went to a school to learn how to flip properties. And it was one of those infomercials that you see. Flew down to Orlando, put me through the school, and it taught enough to start flipping my first properties. And at the same time, I committed to get in the mortgage business because those two went hand in hand really well. So that was in late 1995, and never looked back. It's been 22 years now.
Yeah, you've had some many and varied experiences, Doug.
Well, in the real estate, it was fun because flipping properties, we did it on the side. But over the last 20 years, I was able to flipped 190 properties, and I've had up to 112 rental units at one time, and it's given me a good insight. You as an investment property owner, as I'm doing investment property loans for my clients, I know a lot about those loans now, and I can give them advice on things that's more than just the best mortgage to get.
Yeah, the thing about flipping properties, I work with a lot of real estate investors, and at least I've been doing this for 35 years, and for a lot of folks, it's just a matter of timing whether or not you're going to be successful as a real estate investor.
Well, and they have to treat it like a business.
Right.
And that's, I know some really professional investors. You and I both do, John. And we've watched a good friend of ours become one of the largest investors in the entire Midwest, owns 1,800 single families.
Yeah.
And I sold that same guy his first 80 rental units that I flipped to him. So it's, there's definitely a lot of opportunity out there, but there's risk, and people have to be prepared for it. They have to treat it like a business. And my number one piece of advice for people, if they want to do that, don't quit your day job.
That's right. Well, a lot of people, they get into a situation where, they've got some investment property they're renting out, and they rehab it and flip it, and they've made, $20,000, $30,000 and decide that this is what they want to do full time. And I normally try to discourage that because you don't succeed every time.
Yeah, you don't succeed every time. And, at the point when you have to flip properties to pay your bills, now it's there's a lot more pressure on, and you can't always control how fast that property is going to sell. So the longer you can keep your day job, the better.
Exactly.
And just do it on the side and make it your retirement, whether you're flipping properties or whether you're just trying to gain wealth through owning investment real estate. You know, take your time when you do it. And we know the money's made on the buy, too, so be very, very choosy what properties you buy. And there are a lot of sharks out there.
There are. And real estate is a cutthroat business.
It is a cutthroat business. So, John, as we're talking about investment property loans and mortgages, one question that I get is, what's tax deductible in the loan process? So when we come back, I actually want to talk about that. And if you want to hear this interview again, you're welcome to go to our website and listen to our podcast, Smart With Your Money with Doug Haldeman. If you search that on iTunes or on Google Play, you can re-listen to this. You also, if you visit our website, smartwithyourmoney.com, you'll see the blog post for this at a personal interview with Doug Haldeman. So, John, when we return, we'll be talking about what is tax deductible in the loan process and more when we return. You'll listen to Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1.